Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Infernal Brains podcast. I'm Tars Tarkas from TarsTarkas.net.
And I'm Todd Statman from Die Danger, Die Die Kill, aka 40K. Today we're going to be talking about something that if you are a follower of either or both of our sites, you probably figured we were going to get to eventually, that being Lucha Libre or Mexican wrestling movies, and in particular, we're going to be talking about the movie The Mummies of Guanajuato from 1972. I probably mangled that name. You're going to hear, well, as always, you're going to hear a lot of, I apologize to any Spanish literate or speakers out there.
Las Mummies de Guanajuato, if you speak bad Spanish like we do.
Right, yes. I think, speakers of bad Spanish will, I'm sure, be able to understand us perfectly. This is not, it's not one of the best of the Lucha movies, but it offers a jumping off point to talk about a lot of the tropes of these movies, a lot of the traditions of the Lucha movies, and also the stars, as it features three of the main, the three main stars of Lucha cinema. I don't know, as usual in preparation for this, I've seen this movie a few times and I've written about it. But I did my usual lazy preparation. I should have watched the movie again. Mm-hmm. I did not. Instead, I just went over my old reviews, with a fine-tooth comb. But I know you, Tarkas, have watched it recently. So what do you think of it?
I thought it was pretty good, but it's not like my favorite of the ones I've seen recently. It's got a lot of stuff that is familiar, like, from a lot of films, and I can see why a lot of people regard it as a classic, because it is pretty good, because some of the Luca films get really, really bad and really boring, and this one has at least pretty consistent action. There's only a couple of points where it just drags on to nothing, and there's, more than one wrestler running around punching people, which is always a plus.
I think it's one, if you come to it with the right expectations, you can get, you can have fun with it. It's kind of a fun movie. And especially if you look at it sort of in the context of 70s Lucha movies, which is a time when audience interest in these movies was kind of waning and the money wasn't quite there for these movies. So it was a genre that had sort of fallen into the realm. It was pretty much just the purview of smaller independent producers who could only make money off these movies by making them very quickly and very cheaply, as opposed to the 60s, when they were still B movies, but they were still within the studio system and some care was taken to make them a little more coherent. I mean, Mummies of Guanajuato there's definitely more coherent Lucha movies from the 70s, but there's a lot worse too. You definitely see some sloppy storytelling in this movie, and some digressive trends as far as the narrative. There's a lot of, there's the musical numbers that come out of nowhere and don't really have anything to do with anything. In fact, there's a musical number in this right after we're introduced to a character who's established as being a singer in this lounge. Mm-hmm. We then get a musical number by some other singer that we never ever see again.
Yeah.
But
and there's like characters who die and no one seems to care. And some of them, like, they're killed and the movie just continues. And one of them, at least, they don't even acknowledge that she's dead.
Right.
I didn't know she was supposed to be dead until I read in another person's review that she was dead. And I was like, what?
Right, and she's a pretty major character, too. They could have milked it for a lot of pathos, but they just kind of rush on with it. This movie is directed by Federico Curiel, who's someone whose name pops up a lot as a director of Lucha movies and also Mexican genre movies from the 60s and 70s. He directed a lot of Santo movies. He actually directed movies by Mil Mascaras and Blue Demon, who are also in this movie, and we'll talk more about them. And
he directed like some Neutron films, who's another he was a not a real wrestler, but he pretended to be one on the movies.
He was a a fictional character. I think he was characters like Neutron were created to sort of fill the gap, you know, until Santo signed on to be a movie star because it took a while to get him in the picture. Yeah. So we had these sort of also-ran heroes. And actually, the first three Neutron movies are especially the second one, are quite good. And those are all directed by Curiel.
Yeah, we'll probably get to a Neutron special.
Yeah.
In the not too distant
future. Give Neutron his due.
Yeah.
And also, this movie is a early Lucha film. Not the first, but one of the first Lucha films from Rogelio Agra Sanchez, who was a independent producer, distributor, and writer. Definitely one of the things I'm talking about with 70s Lucha movies, his films tend to be pretty emblematic of the state of Lucha, the sorry state of Lucha films during the 70s. Again, Mummies of Guanajuato being sort of an exception. He also did the Champions of Justice movies, the first Champions of Justice movie coming out just a year before this one. Also the Super Zan movies, which was a wrestling persona that Agra Sanchez created around this bodybuilder, basically an invented wrestler to be his own star of these films, which were really atrocious. The first Super Zan movie is probably, in fact, now that I'm thinking of it, we've done our worst. I still stand by Magic Lizard as the worst movie I've seen, but I think Super Zan is pretty close behind that. But Agra Sanchez's movies tended to have a real feeling of being made up on the spot and just kind of throwing elements at the screen. I think something that's pretty typical of 70s movies, Lucha movies, is that they weren't, they seemed less concerned with telling a story than they were just basically with achieving a suitable feature length, so that they, as long as they got that 90 minutes, so if they just had to throw in some stock footage, you know, an old cartoon, some musical numbers, someone watching TV for 15 minutes.
Yeah, they set certain goals, like we need 3 wrestling sequences, so we'll put those in, and then we need a kid, so someone will adopt a kid for this movie.
Right.
And we need a girl, so one of them will have a girlfriend.
Right. And there has to be midgets. That's the other thing. This movie actually has one midget who's played by, I think his name is Jorge Pinguino.
Yeah.
And he plays the character of Pinguino. Yeah. And he shows up in other Agra Sanchez movies, notably in Champions of Justice, where there's sort of this, the villain has a little army of midgets who wear these red superhero costumes with an M on the chest. Another movie, they were miniature vampires. I don't know what it was about what Agra Sanchez had for midgets, but it seemed, he felt like it was, if you had a big burly wrestler, it was much more exciting to watch him fight 6 midgets instead of one normal-sized person. Like, that was like, there was just entertainment value.
The midget wrestling matches in wrestling where they'll have a bunch of midgets versus normal people. So they probably got the idea from that.
Right. Because everybody loves that.
He actually went to one of Santo's shows and saw some the BX fighting each other. And he's like,
So we should probably talk about the lineup of stars in this movie.
Yes.
We kind of mentioned them already, but
so we'll give you brief bios because we'll probably have more focused podcasts in the future on each of the characters because they just put out so many movies. It's just so hard to so hard to briefly go over. But let's see. Starting up is the most famous wrestler, El Santo, who you've probably heard of many times. He was born Rodolfo Guzman Huerta in 1917, and then he had his debut was either in 34 or 35, depending on who is talking, and he wrestled for close to almost 50 years, like 48 years, and around 1958, he was finally convinced to do movies, and he made 50 movies that he starred in and 2 more that he was cameoed in.
Right.
Everyone compares himself to Santo, and he died in 1984 and was buried wearing his mask.
Right. Yeah, he's a legend. He's a legend. And he's definitely going to be the one that most people outside of Mexico are familiar with, especially in the States, because he's the only one of these three stars. I guess I should also mention that one of the things that's most notable about this film, The Mummies of Guanajuato, is it is the first and one of only two films that starred all three of the major stars of Lucha Libre and of Lucha Libre Cinema, mm-hmm. Being Santo, Blue Demon, and Mil Máscaras. But of those three, Santo is the only one whose movies were ever actually dubbed into English and aired on American television.
Yeah, I think four of them total, according to... I've only seen two in English.
Yeah, there was two that Kay Gordon Murray did, and then there was another one. I'm not sure the Santo versus the Zombies was dubbed and released as, I think, War of the Zombies? I should have done more.
I don't know. That'll be discussed on...
This will be discussed later. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll just throw out an accuracy as far as Santa was concerned.
Subscribe on iTunes for future updates.
But, yes, while these other two had great films, they tended to not go outside the Spanish language market. Mm-hmm. And so these other guys aren't quite as well known, but they are definitely... noteworthy.
Yeah. Next up, Blue Demon, born Alejandro Muñoz Moreno in 1922. He debuted in 1948, and he had a 40-year wrestling career. Unlike Santo originally started out as a Rudo. Yeah, Rudo, which is a heel or a bad guy.
Right.
And Blue Demon is always a técnico, which is a face or
well, the técnicos are—they're the guys that play. They're the good guys.
Yeah,
they play by the rules, you know. And
the
Rudos break the rules, you know. So.
And so in real life, he and Santo are actually rivals, and they had some highly publicized matches.
Right.
Where Blue Demon 50s. Won, and Santo was always bitter that he lost those matches. According to what I don't know if it was all.
Right. Oh, yeah, oh. I have to admit I'm a little hazy on all this stuff. It's really funny because, you know, the first side I did was the Lucha Diaries, writing about Mexican wrestling movies. I love Mexican wrestling movies. I'm not really a fan of wrestling at all. So I don't really like a lot of the people who are the fans of these movies are also fans of these guys as wrestlers, you know, and I guess I am too, just as part of being fans of them as human beings. But my impression of Lucha Libre is it's not that much different from American professional wrestling as far as the balance between theater and actual athletics. And
especially from the clips they show in the movies, it looks like it's as, like, I know they have matches on DVD that I've seen in the bargain bins, but I've never gotten one of those matches.
Yeah.
But I've been to, like, local amateur wrestling shows because I've had coworkers who've actually been doing wrestling. So
mm-hmm.
When I worked in St. Louis, one of my coworkers was a wrestler there, and her company that she worked for, they actually had people dressed up as Lucha Libres there as generic villains for some of the characters, just so they'd have more people. And because they wore the mask, you know, anybody could play them, and they could also kill them in the ring, so they'd always be slaughtered by the bad guys.
But because all that, I don't really know what to make about all this talk of the rivalry between Blue Demon and Santo. I mean, it's a legendary thing, and you can't read anything about the both of them without hearing about this rivalry, and it apparently was some enmity between them. And also concerning this movie, The Mummies of Guanajuato, too, because it was originally intended to be a movie just starring Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras. And then Rogelio Agra Sanchez kind of got cold feet about putting all his money just on these somewhat lesser stars, and at the last minute brought Santo in. Mm-hmm. And this was apparently something that Blue Demon was bitter about to the end of his days.
Yeah.
And also there's the fact that Blue Demon and Santo were cast as allies on screen. They were sort of like Batman and Robin in a few different movies, even though they were rivals in the ring, and the way that they, you know, the way that they compensated for that in the movies is they always had the episode in every movie where Blue Demon goes bad, he either gets cloned or there's a robot version. And so you can see Santo and Blue Demon fight because that's part of the attraction. But yeah, I don't really know because I do sort of assume these are like similar to American, I think Indian professional wrestling too. I mean, it's a lot of theater, but apparently there it sounds like there was something real to this rivalry between Blue Demon and Santo.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just I want to invest in that. Maybe I just want to believe.
Yeah, we'll never know because unfortunately, Blue Demon is also passed on.
Yeah, he passed on. He's also 2000, I think.
Yeah, and he also was buried in his mask, and he never revealed his face, unlike Santo, who revealed his face like right before he died.
That's right.
And both of them have sons who are wrestlers. So there's El Hijo de Santo and whatever El Hijo de Blue Demon. I don't remember.
I think it's Blue Demon Junior.
Yeah.
I think Santo's son now just goes as Santo.
Yeah.
He doesn't use the Son of Santo moniker anymore.
Yeah. There's also Santo's grandson who's a son of a different son of Santo, and so he and the son of Santo argue because the son of Santo has the rights to the Santo name.
Oh, okay. And then there's the Santo Babies spinoff, of course.
Yes. Number three is Mil Mascaras, who is not dead and has no son who wrestles.
So you know him. Yeah. And his name is Aaron Rodriguez, and he's actually a lot younger than these other two guys and began his career much later. He was born in 42, and he started his career as a wrestler in 65, which was only a year before he started making movies, which really places him in a sort of different category from Santo and Blue Demon, who both started making movies in their middle years, after they'd already established themselves as superstars in the wrestling world. It was almost, being in movies was almost like their retirement plan.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of like the plan B. But Mil Mascaras, sort of his movie stardom and his wrestling stardom sort of grew up alongside each other. Both Mil Mascaras and Blue Demon made films, a number of films for a very low-budget producer named Luis Enrique Vergara. And both made a lot of really good movies. Not nearly as many as Santo, but they had a much better hits-to-misses ratio out of their, you know.
For Blue Demon, I have, you've made 25 films, nine of which were with Santo.
Right.
And I'm not sure how many Mil Mascaras has made, but he's still making films, actually.
Yeah.
He's still wrestling.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he did a movie a few years ago that was actually done in the States.
Yeah, and they're making a sequel.
Right,
there,
yeah,
which,
yeah.
And he's wrestling later this year, or will be in 2012. So, you know, go see him and
say hello.
And get a mask signed.
Tell him the Infernal Brain sent you.
Yes, then he'll call security. So the final character in the film are the mummies.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to talk about the mummies.
Indeed. Yeah, I think there's people coming to these particular mummy movies might be a little confused if they have a background in sort of Hollywood style or any other kind of mummy movie from anywhere but Mexico. Because when you see this movie, the mummies are a lot more what we'd call zombies. You know, they're more like sort of decaying, walking corpses rather than the...
Yeah, if you get National Geographic magazine and you see, like, mummies that are found buried in, like, the deserts or, like, natural mummies, that's pretty much what these are.
Yeah, these are naturally occurring mummies. And they're the mummies of Guanajuato, which is a real thing, and you actually see them in the movie.
Yeah, and you can go see them nowadays, even though they're controversial in the city, sort of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they're still a tourist attraction.
Are they controversial for reasons of good taste? No, that can't be it. And these are not ancient mummies either. These are the corpses of people that were buried between the late 1800s and about the 1950s. And the thing with Guanajuato is for years they had basically a graveyard tax, and that people basically had to pay a yearly fee to keep their loved ones in the cemetery. And of course, sometimes people couldn't pay, and when people couldn't pay, they would dig them up, and that was how they would find. There were also a lot of people buried there as a result of a cholera epidemic in the city in the late 30s. So as they were digging these people up, they discovered that a lot of them had been mummified, and they don't really... I don't think they know for sure why, but it's been speculated that it's something about the soil or the atmospheric conditions.
And so they, you know, they put some on display that looked cool, and then
the ones that looked the most like they were buried alive. Like some of them have these horrible grimaces on their faces.
Yeah.
Then some of them look like very burly, fleshy wrestlers, at least according to this movie.
And they're in a separate room,
not covered in glass. As Pinguino, the guy that at the mummy museum tells us at the beginning of the movie, we get the little travelogue bit where after a very, very long sequence following a tour bus through the city, which really serves as a warning sign of what the pacing of this movie is going to be like.
Yeah, Guanajuato is pretty gray, white. It's like gray. Dude, it all looks all stone made. Looks pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, there probably was a way to make the city look prettier. It's kind of hard to tell. A lot of these '70s movies, Curiel, the movies he made in the '60s in black and white, very atmospheric, really nice. You know, black and white photography, almost noirish, kind of gothic looking. Seems like when the '70s came around, they were making these movies in color. Some of these directors kind of lost their footing a little bit because there's a lot of stuff in this movie. And in other 70s Lucha movies where it just looks like there's a lot of scenes where it just looked like they just pointed a bunch of floodlights directly at the actors and turned the camera on. It's like it's not, a lot of it's not a very pretty looking.
Yeah, I think movie. If it was in black and white, it could have been more atmospheric.
Yeah.
And also the music's changed to where it's more, there's a lot more, this has like organ pipe playing in the beginning.
Right.
A lot more 70s sound. Like there's a 70s sounding for Mexico, 70s sounding film versus the 60s more atmospheric sounding.
Yeah, and some of the music really in this movie sounds like roller skate rink music. I mean, that's another sort of hallmark of Rogelio Agra Sanchez's movies is these really sort of not... inappropriate musical scores. The first Champions of Justice movie, it just sounds like they put on an album of light West Coast jazz and just let it play through the whole thing, no matter what's going on, whether it's a dialogue scene or midgets are being fought. There's just, it really doesn't add much of anything. This one, it's actually not as bad, but it's still very, it undercuts any kind of mood of ominousness or foreboding that you might otherwise have had.
Yeah, it's whatever music was cheap that week at the music
store.
Yeah,
I think that's really what it came down to. So yeah, we start off in the museum. We see the actual mummies, and then Pinguino takes the crowd down to the special room where there's seven very special mummies who are less. I think he even says in the dialogue that they're less decomposed than the rest, or they're in better shape than the rest of them.
Yeah. And there's one special mummy who's wearing...
the most specialist of all.
He's wearing a luchador mask. And his name is Satan.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Satan the mummy. When Satan was alive 100 years ago, he was an evil guy who sold his soul to the devil.
He was an evil wrestler.
Evil wrestler.
Yeah.
But Santo's ancestor, Santo, fought Satan in an epic wrestling battle and... did he kill him or defeat him? I can't remember.
I think he just defeated him.
Okay.
I think he defeated them, but maybe then Satan came and took his soul, effectively, killing him. And this is a repeated theme, actually, in Santo's movies throughout the 60s. And I think this is the first one in the 70s where it comes up, but it is something that comes up in these movies, is this idea of the Santo identity being a legacy that's handed off over the years. And so there's a few other movies where the plot hinges on something, an ancestor of Santo, it's an enemy of an ancestor of Santo. There's actually a few where the ancestor, the flashbacks to this ancestor, he's called the Caballero El Enmascarado de Plata, that's the best I could do. It's set in colonial times, and a lot of times they'll just have Santo, but he'll have like a frilly Sir Walter Raleigh collar.
Yeah.
But there's also ones where there's a different actor playing him. So there will be sort of a backstory where the Santo ancestor faced a threat failed to contain that threat or you know, came under some kind of curse, and then that comes back to haunt the modern day Santo in the modern day. And it all just kind of goes to show that Santo's ancestors weren't very good at taking care of business. And so Santo always ends up having to clean up their messes for them. So that's kind of what happens here.
You know, every family has their dirty secrets.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Santo's just come to life and try to kill him, so.
Right. This was an appropriate one for the holidays, now you mentioned it. We're doing this just a couple days after Christmas. And so after telling this story, one of the people in the tour group goes, well, what? After, what's his name? Satan was defeated by Santo. Yeah. Santo claimed, Satan decreed that 100 years hence he would return to take revenge on Santo, Santo's ancestors. And one of the people in the tour group says, well, when is it going to be 100 years? And the and Pinguino thinks for a moment and says, why, that would be exactly today.
Yeah. You know, great coincidence.
Exactly. Just,
you know. Of course, all
that. And that was the first time he ever told that story, too.
Yeah. It's amazing how it all turned out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Satan's head turns. And
right. And then, of course, you know, you won't be able to guess what happens next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to give the whole blow-by-blow. And actually, the movie doesn't really give the whole blow-by-blow, because the minute we get a hint that the mummies are coming back to life, we go to, like, the inn in the town where Neil Mascaris's girlfriend works with her friend who's a cigarette girl.
Yeah.
His girlfriend, Lena, who's played by Elsa Cardenas, who is someone who, a woman who is in a lot of Lucha movies, a lot of Santo movies, a lot of Mexican B movies, and also was starred opposite Elvis in Fun in Acapulco. Have to get that in there. And she was, and she even got promoted to being a superhero herself in the last Champions of Justice movie. When they were running out of wrestlers to put in the Champions of Justice movies, I can't remember what she was called, but she had an awesome costume that involved these really high platform heels.
Like when they had the Great Lakes Avengers in the Avenger comics.
Right, yeah.
The C-Squad.
A lot of turnover in the Champions of Justice movies. To make a long story short, of course, Satan comes back to life, as is told in the prophecy, as do the other six mummies, and it's never really explained who they are or why they're there. They're just his posse.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Mil Mascaris and Blue Demon are in town for a wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
And so the girls and Pinguino run to them. And they're kind of dicks about the whole thing, which is really funny because they tell Mil Mascaris and Blue that, you know, that the mummies are missing, that there are footprints, they appear to have walked away, and they just poo-pooing them and say, you know, that's ridiculous. I'm sure there's a logical explanation when
we've only fought monsters before,
right? Exactly.
But this time it's a lie.
Right, exactly. So there's no, I'm sorry fans of canon, there's no continuity between these movies and any of the previous movies. Blue Demon fought aliens in like three different movies. He fought vampires. He was in a movie that was basically a remake of The Phantom of the Opera. You know, Mil Mascaris was in a movie with John Carradine playing a vampire king. You know, there's all, pretty much all of their other movies are supernatural theme, but in this one, they're not believers.
They pay for their non-believing because immediately Blue Demon gets conked on the back of the head by Satan.
Right.
And then Satan wanders into the wrestling room and has a flashback with his fight against Santo the Elder, I guess.
Yeah, and I felt like they're trying to sort of, that's sort of a poignant moment, because I feel like you're supposed to feel Satan's pain, because he's reliving the humiliation of the match.
Yeah, it's his embarrassment.
Yeah, also it's an opportunity to show another really long wrestling sequence.
Yeah.
I wanted to add that the actor who plays Satan is a wrestler named Manuel Leal, who also portrayed the soul patch wearing Frankenstein in Santo and Blue Demon versus the monster. Actually, it was more of a goatee-wearing Frankenstein. The beatnik Frankenstein. He was also the wrestler Tinieblas, who, aside from having a pro wrestling career, was in a number of Agra Sanchez's films, including at least the first Champions of Justice movie. I think he was in a couple of the other ones. And Tinieblas is one of my favorite also-ran wrestlers. He had a really cool mask that was just all black mesh, so he kind of had no face. And I think he originally started out as a rudo to Mil Máscaras. He was one of Mil Máscaras's regular opponents in the ring. So, and he's a big, tall, imposing guy, so he was good for these monster roles too.
Yeah, he's also in at least two of the pseudo sequels.
Yes, yeah. There were quite. This movie did very well, and there were. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of sequels made in very quick succession. None of them came anywhere near this one in terms
it's like
of popularity.
You know, Roadhouse and Roadhouse 2.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Today they would have been either Sci-Fi Channel sequels or direct to DVD. I mean, most notably because none of them had the same, you know, the same star power. Santo didn't appear in any of the sequels. I'm not sure if even Mil Máscaras and Blue Demon appeared together in any of the sequels. Again, I should have done that research. Yeah. But
they got Mil Máscaras, but they got Blue Angel as the other.
Right,
the
Blue other. Angel, who kind of looks like Captain America. Yeah. And then for the third, the castle of the Mummies of Guanajuato, they had Super Zan. So that's how low they'd fallen. So anyway, so we had this very poignant scene of Satan having the flashback in the empty arena and reliving his humiliation at the hands of Santo's ancestor. And then he has a confrontation with the pack and heat janitor.
Yeah, who put the janitor who's a director's cameo, and that's probably why he pulls out a gun and just starts shooting at Satan. And Satan's already mad because of his memories, and then he goes even more mad and kills the janitor, and then he goes to a park and just starts strangling random people.
Right.
And, you know, that's, you know, Satan. Who would have thought that, you know, a guy who sells his soul to the devil and his name's Satan is evil? It's, you know, a shock.
He's just hurting inside. Yeah. He's hurting inside.
Yeah. And the police, you know, are incompetent. And so.
Well, I think, and I think once Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras become convinced that there is a homicidal mummy running loose, I think that they discover one of the bodies, and then for some reason they decide not to tell the police.
Well, they decide that only a wrestler could kill people like that.
Right.
And that's what they don't tell the police, because they don't want to get...
They feel like they'll be implicated, even though at that point in the story there's no real reason why that would be. And then someone suggests that Santo be called in, and Blue Demon is just... Like, he doesn't like that idea. Boo!
How dare you? This is my name on the...
Yeah,
on the
exactly. And the whole movie kind of... It really is kind of sad, because you can see how it was set up to be a vehicle for Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras, but then you can see how it then, in bringing in Santo and sort of rejiggering the story to fit Santo, they sort of... You know, it sort of ends up being a humiliation for Blue Demon in a way.
Especially since the mummies go on and kill a lot more people, and had they just called Santo in earlier, there'd be a lot more people alive.
So. Right, and all they do, I don't know what they were thinking with this movie. It really does seem very much made up as they went along, because every confrontation that Mil Máscaras and Blue Demon have with the mummies ends with one of them, Blue Demon, saying, "Oh, they're undefeatable, they're indestructible," and they run away. Like, they basically get their asses kicked and run away at the end of every confrontation they have with the mummies. And one of their girlfriends gets killed. They don't really... don't really make much headway against the mummies.
Yeah, Mil Máscaras gets the girl, Lena is his girlfriend.
Right,
Blue Demon doesn't get a girl, he gets an adopted son named Julio.
Yeah, there's definitely there's definitely efforts made towards providing some backstory here for the wrestlers, a little character development, which you don't always see in these movies. And I like that about it, because one of the things I love about the Lucha Libre movies is that is this conceit that the masked wrestler persona is who these guys are. Like, it's not an identity. It's not like an alternate identity. It's like, you know, you can call these superhero movies, but they're not in the sense that superhero movies, there's always an aspect of transformation. Mm-hmm. And also there's a tension between the two different identities. That tension doesn't exist because mm-hmm. Blue Demon is Blue Demon. And, mm-hmm. and that makes for some really funny juxtapositions when it comes to like portraying them in real life. So in this movie, you have Blue Demon and his little adopted son. Yeah. Is it Julio?
Yeah, Julio.
Right, and so you see Blue Demon at home with Julio, who's like 8 or something, playing with him at home and, you know, horsing around and being having a warm father-son relationship. But in all these scenes, he's wearing his mask.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that Julio may never have seen his dad without the mask and may actually just think that Blue Demon's mask is his dad's actual face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and it's awesome. But it's definitely... And Blue Demon, he does a good job with the kid. I think, you know, you see a little warmth. You see a different side to him.
At the home, the mummies keep attacking. And eventually, Satan breaks in while Blue Demon is upstairs and punches out Blue Demon and then steals his entire outfit.
Right.
And gives it to another mummy to become the evil Blue Demon.
No, he steals it off his back.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see Blue Demon, they don't show him naked, but you see him knock Blue Demon out, take his mask off, and then the next scene you see the henchman in the clothes that Blue Demon is wearing. So it's like the ultimate humiliation. It's like the worst example of the evil Blue Demon trope in any of the movies, I think.
And so now, you know, the cops are blundering around, and soon they see the evil Blue Demon killing people, and they're like, oh, that explains it.
Right, the mummies frame the wrestlers. They're smart. The mummies are not just stupid automatons. Oh, and this leads, speaking of the sloppy storytelling, this is one of my favorite things, too. There's a scene where Blue and Mil Mascaris are just hanging out at Mil Mascaris' girlfriend's apartment. You know, like they have been through the whole movie, and they're watching the TV, and the TV announcer is talking about how, you know, Blue Demon and Mil Mascaris are now suspects in the murders and are now on the run for the police. But while they're watching it, they're still sitting in this. They're just sitting in the apartment where they've been the whole time. So
And they never move out of the apartment, even with the mummies constantly attacking the apartment.
Right?
Too.
No, they just
That's a theme I've seen in the other Santo films. No one leaves the house.
Right.
And the few times they do leave the house and go somewhere public, they just get attacked by the monsters in public. So
they don't really get the whole safe house concept.
Yeah.
But obviously not a lot of effort is being made on the part of the constabulary to find these fugitive wrestlers or supposed fugitive wrestlers.
And then they, you know, they go out to clear their names and they get in the convertible car with the top down and drive around town. And since the town's all gray colored and they're, you know, brightly colored masks driving around.
The idea of Mil Mascaris being on the run, because throughout this movie he's wearing leopard print hot pants over gold lamé, you know, leggings and a red vest over bare chest, and he drives a lime green dune buggy around the street. So this is what Mil Mascaris looks like when he's on the lam from the police.
Completely inconspicuous.
Absolutely, yeah.
While they're out trying to clear their name, the mummies just attack the house anyway.
Right.
And they kidnap Julio and Lena, and then there's the other girl, Alicia, the cigarette girl. They just kill her.
Right. In a shocking development.
Yeah. You know, you're not dating a main character, so.
Right.
Goodbye.
Right. And ultimately what this all leads up to is, I mean, the scoreboard doesn't look good for our heroes, and it's just kind of fail. On their part. And then at some point, obviously, the director, the producer, all of the above said, okay, it's time to end the movie. Mm-hmm. And so what we get is a sequence where Santo and his manager, who is played by Carlos Suarez, who actually was Santo's manager, at least for some of his career, are just driving by They're coming home from a match, probably going to on their way to Mexico City, and decide to stop off in Guanajuato for the night. And just happen to pull into the town square as this horrific mummy melee is going on. They're massacring everybody in the town. You know, the Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras are doing their best, but they keep getting beaten down. And the cops, their weapons are useless.
My favorite part is the cops are just firing into the crowd of people and mummies. And Santa's like, stop shooting into the crowd. You know, no, it's not Law and Order in Guanajuato.
No, it is not. It's so Santo shows up, and Santo, for a minute, he also joins in the chorus of they're undefeatable, they're indestructible. Mm-hmm. But then he remembers that he has some flame pistols in his car, and he sends Mil Máscaras to go get the flame pistols. Mm-hmm.
Luckily he's got three.
He's got three and they're sitting right on the seat too, which is weird because that was just where Carlos Suarez was. So and then they let loose on the on the mummies with the flame pistols, which just look like they're, you know, they've got a little like a butane, you know, I don't know what it is, like a cigarette lighter gun or something like that.
Yeah, purify the world of mummy scum.
Yeah, those mummies burn real good. They don't seem that indestructible. If anyone had just lit a match around them at any time during the previous 90 minutes, they would have been gone. So, so and that's it. And then they burn the mummies to a crisp, and then Mil Máscaras's girlfriend says to Blue Demon, you know, this would have been over a lot sooner if you had just called Santo. It's like, burn! So cruel.
Yeah.
I could see why Blue Demon... I mean, literally, Blue Demon was supposedly... He rued making this movie for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He was bitter about the whole experience. I think Mil Máscaras took it a lot more in stride, but
Blue... Oh, yeah. He was probably just happy to be there.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, it's the next morning, and everyone leaves to go to Guadalajara for some food, because I guess there's no good restaurants in Guanajuato.
Uh-huh.
All the cooks were killed.
Right, that's a problem. Yeah.
And so everyone's happy and no one's, you know, sad at all that hundreds of people died and some of their close friends. And,
right.
You know, and the shock of, you know, burning, you know, mummies to death.
The smell of burning mummies still lingering in the air. Yeah. But the wrestlers hop into their expensive sports cars and take off for an expensive meal.
Yeah. It's, you know, such is the life. That's the mummies. Of Guanajuato.
It's Guanajuato. I'm sorry. Mispronounce it the way I mispronounce it, damn it.
That's the mummies of G-Town.
Yeah. But as I was saying before, this movie was... This was sort of like the last hurrah of the genre. It was a really popular film. It played for 9 straight weeks in Mexico City. It had a longer theatrical run than any of Santo's previous movies. This was at a time when the genre was on the wane, so this was, you know, sort of a surprising success, and it spawned a whole mess of sequels, some more official than others, but all of them produced by Rogelio Agra Sanchez. There was the, as you mentioned, the robbery of the mummies of Guanajuato, the castle of the mummies of Guanajuato. Then there was one called The Mansion of the 7 Mummies, which was Blue Demon and Super Zen.
The Mummies of San Angel.
Right, was Tenille Blas, I think. Yeah. And
Mil Máscaras.
And Mil Máscaras. So there's, for the next 4 years, there wasn't... There was rarely a time when you couldn't go to the movies in Mexico. Mummy Mania in Mexico. This is definitely that. Some of those sequels are pretty dismal. This is definitely the best of those mummy movies.
Yeah.
And still, you know, you have to come to it with the right attitude. It's a pretty sloppy affair. You know, they pulled a lot of this movie right out of their butts. But, you know, if you just go with it, it's fun to see these three guys together, especially, you know, Mil Mascaris and Blue Demon, who I always enjoy. It's great to see them get the limelight, even if it's not in the, you know, in the best circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Still enjoyable. Not as good as, I mean, I prefer some of the Santo and Blue Demon team-ups of the 70s to this one, but still, I'd give it a recommendation.
Yeah, it's worth seeing if you like the Lucro Libre genre. If you're completely new, it's not, you know, the one that you should be introduced to.
Right, yeah, no, so I don't think it's a good introduction to the genre. I would definitely start with some of the 60s movies, either or some of the early Santo movies like Santo versus the Vampire Woman, or some of the Blue mm-hmm. Demon ones. I mean, the our namesake, Blue Demon versus the Infernal Brains, is pretty much my favorite lucha movie, period. That's a really fun one. So I'd recommend that, or the sequel, which is
Santo versus the Martians.
Santo versus Martians. You kind of can't go wrong with that one. I mean,
yeah, that's one of my favorites. It's my favorite solo one, I think, of the ones I've seen. I haven't seen all of them yet.
But we're going to tackle Santo on his own. Yeah, sometime soon.
So much Santo that you can just, you know, we could just do a Santo only podcast.
Absolutely.
You'd have years worth of material.
Yeah. Fortunately, many of Santo's films really aren't worth talking about that much.
Yeah,
you know, out of 52 movies, Santo kind of just went with the paychecks, you know.
Like, sure, whatever, I don't have to get hurt in the ring.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. All right, I think we put these mummies to bed.
Yeah. So we'll be back in 100 years when the mummy is like Guanajuato rises from the dead to get revenge on our descendants. And so
make sure that your descendants 100 years hence listen to that episode.
Yeah. You know, on hollow iPods.
Hollow iPods. Filled with holy water.
Okay.
All right.
Let's sign off.